KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
In the Outer Sunset.
Suffolk Market.
Union City.
In the 69th Village.
It's not the dog patch, it's just dog patch.
Coming up, a group of hackers and activists in Oakland are building their own internet.
To make the internet less of this obtuse magic thing and something that we can all build together.
Then we kick off our interviews with Oakland's mayoral candidates. Today, a conversation with Jesse Smith.
When politicians pretend to be experts on everything, all things to all people on every topic, I don't trust that.
And how an ex-criminal broke off his relationship with anger.
We got a divorce. It was amicable.
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is coming up. Yesterday, Governor Jerry Brown signed the nation's strongest net neutrality law to stop internet providers from favoring certain content or websites. This prompted a lawsuit by the Trump administration, opening the next phase in the battle over regulating the internet. Amidst the growing distrust of big tech and big data, some Oakland residents are working on one possible solution, a locally sourced internet. KALW's Celine Ross has more.
In the Fruitvale district of Oakland, on a rooftop on 23rd Avenue, a group of five people are huddled around a coil of Ethernet cable and some sort of antenna.
Definitely best if we're gonna
just like mount it to this. Yeah.
Every couple minutes, a BART train whizzes by, and on the other side of the freeway, you can see the village, a homeless encampment. They're installing a node, an internet router which, once connected, could help the people living in the village across the freeway get internet access. They're volunteer hackers and activists from a group called Pseudomesh, and they're building a network called the People's Open Network, which, they claim, could not only increase people's access to the internet, but also their control over it.
So we're going to mount it to this pole, and that'll be great because it'll shoot right in. We have a lot of options in the village to see it.
But before we get deeper into this particular project, let's back up. How does the internet work? And how exactly can you build your own?
Access to the internet should be as basic a resource and shareable resource as food and water and housing.
Jenny Ryan is a co-founder of the Pseudo Room, a hackerspace or tech-oriented community workspace in Oakland. She started the meetups for Pseudomesh there back in 2013.
The first year was primarily learning how the internet works.
Here's a quick rundown. When you open a website on your computer connects to the internet via an ISP, an internet service provider. The ISP uses bandwidth to channel information around the internet. Think of it like roads that connect distant cities. The tier one ISPs like AT&T, Level 3, and Comcast control these big interstate highways and sell access down to tier two and tier three providers.
Getting bandwidth from one of these tier one or tier two providers, it's really expensive. There are places in across Oakland where there's only one ISP provider, and maybe that provider doesn't serve that area very well or overcharges in that area because they have essentially a monopoly. So you have huge swaths of Oakland where people can't even afford a monthly subscription because their only option is paying $70 a month to Comcast.
Besides costs, according to Ryan and the rest of the team, there are a bunch of other issues with the way these big ISPs control the internet. Things like collecting personal data and throttling or slowing down connections. And it's not just about what movie sites you can watch. This was recently in the news because of Verizon throttling data speeds for firefighters in Santa Clara.
During the largest wildfire in state history, Verizon slowed the speed of the Santa Clara County Fire Department's data plant.
The hackers of Pseudomesh are building the People's Open Net because they want internet access to be in the hands of the people. All the code that's being used to build the network is open source, meaning anyone can see it and use or modify it in any way. That's a big part of the philosophy behind the project, sharing knowledge and educating people.
There's a sense that internet is you know, a magical thing, a lack of education and awareness of how it works. So the project is sort of twofold, which is A, to like eliminate that, this digital divide, this barriers to access that currently exist, and two, to make the internet less of this, you know, obtuse magic thing and something that we can all build together.
So to do this, Ryan and the team have been meeting every Tuesday night at Omni Commons, a community space in Oakland.
To build our own version of it.
A group of about 10 volunteers strategize next steps for the project, write code, and teach each other about the technology.
You can SSH into these, and you SCP over that file.
That's Grant Gallo. And though what he's saying might sound super complicated, at its simplest level, he's explaining how to set up a new node, or internet router, like the one the team was installing on the roof, and connect to the wireless mesh network. That node will bounce an internet signal from the roof on 23rd Ave to the encampment across the street. It can pick up the signal from the community space below, which has installed another special mesh router called a home node, and has chosen to share their internet connection so that their neighbors can get internet access. Ben Goring has been coming to the meetups for about 6 months now.
For me, I think it's very weird that most people or most families end up paying like a monthly fee to their internet service providers, and yet we're all sort of renting the same amount each month from the ISPs instead of sharing it as a community.
So with home nodes and extender nodes on rooftops, you could bounce an internet signal from house to house, which would enhance accessibility and make the cost of internet cheaper for everyone. The project has secured donated bandwidth from the Internet Archive, a local nonprofit dedicated to the freedom of digital information. But to make use of it, they need resources to install expensive equipment. And, of course, they need access to more roofs.
People that are like have roots in the community and like can do what they want with their roofs is like rarer than you would think, and is valuable for like those long-term investments of space and time.
Creating an alternative network on a shoestring budget and going up against big companies is no easy task. But for Ryan and the rest of the team, it's something that is well worth the challenge.
This is only one piece of a larger puzzle of essentially building a solidarity economy of shared resources and not wasting those resources that are all around us. The overarching goal is to mesh the planet, of course.
In Oakland, for Cross Currents, I'm Celine Ross.
PseudoMesh holds open meetings Tuesday nights at the Omni Commons in Oakland. To find out more, go to klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. It's election season, and the Oakland mayor's race is underway. 10 candidates are vying for the big city position. As in past elections, KELW will be bringing you interviews with all the mayoral candidates. First up is activist Jesse Smith. He spoke with KELW's Janae Darden about his plans to take on the major issues facing the city if he wins.
My background is as an activist and focusing on issues of police corruption, and in the last couple of years, also on the rise of Nazi activity. I attend those rallies. I plead the Fifth Amendment on what I do there. And this has been my main focus for the last 10 years or so.
Are you originally from Oakland?
No. I've lived in Oakland for about 15 years, originally from all over the country, moved around a lot growing up. Parents were drug dealers during the drug war, so we never stayed in one place very long.
So you're running for mayor. Why do you want to be mayor of Oakland?
I believe I have the best solutions to the problems we face, and I also understand that no one person is qualified to lead Oakland. And the office of strong mayor, which is unique to Oakland, allows for the decentralization of power. If elected, I would donate the entirety of my salary, which is about $1 million over the course of 4 years, to bringing on advisors and experts from the community, whether that's academic experts or experts because they are from here.
And you mentioned experts because one thing I noticed about you following you is that you say that you are a single issue candidate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's been issues in Oakland with policing. There's been scandals, racial profiling, racial violence involving police. So what is your idea or plan for how to address those situations?
The problem is fundamental and systemic. If we fired every Oakland cop today and replace them with saints tomorrow, within a few years we'd be back in the same situation. The problem is the design of the institution. Basically, my proposal is effectively the temporary privatization of policing by giving every community its own stipend from the government, like a charter school voucher, to hire their own security to their own standards. After 10 years, this would turn into Mad Max. Privatizing police would be a huge problem. However, it would be very effective at disrupting the police union. It would also increase local hiring and build social networks that would go on after. Currently, in wealthier neighborhoods in Oakland, they have private security. And if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for everyone else.
Okay, so another issue that I wanted that's impacting you is housing. And so I know you're homeless, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been homeless or unhoused? Which term do you prefer to use?
Currently, I've been homeless for a few months now. I didn't start the campaign homeless. And I've been homeless at different periods in my life, experienced different types of homelessness, some much more abject. I don't like how we're talking about homelessness at large, because this is more an expression of racism. The camps are estimated to be 75% black.
So I know you said this is not your expertise as far as solution, but what is your idea for housing?
This is not my area of expertise. What they say is you have to have 10,000 hours in an area to be an expert. And so I wouldn't even really talk about the solutions. These are macroeconomic matters.
What do you think about dense housing?
High-density poverty housing, that inflicts intergenerational trauma. That is harmful to children. I grew up in, you know, what we call projects, and as it inflicts intergenerational trauma, specifically towards one race, it promotes the agenda of white supremacy. And so I completely oppose tiny homes proposals and other such high-density solutions. High-density housing and tiny homes for techies, if, you know, they want a tiny home as a fashionable alternative to show how hip they are, great.
What do you think about, speaking of poor jobs, mm-hmm. I mean, we're hearing that, you know, the economy is doing well, but we're also hearing from people who say, yeah, my check doesn't stretch as far as it did 20 years ago. What would you do about that? Because right now, the tech industry is big here, but not everyone works in the tech industry. Not everyone wants to work in the tech industry.
If there's thousands of people living in tents in every city, the economy is terrible. So I turned 18 during the first tech boom, and I started started working and building a life. And that tech boom, the tech workers were actually affluent, and it trickled down to the rest of us. I was working in restaurants, getting great tips. I even got to work in the tech industry as a project manager, and there was a lot of opportunity created by the first tech boom. But what we're seeing now is, even though the tech workers are being paid a lot of money, they are being charged a lot in rent, and they're not actually affluent. They're not able to spread the wealth around.
That's Jesse Smith, a candidate to be the next mayor of Oakland. He spoke with KLW's Janae Darden. If you've got questions for Jesse or any of the other candidates, you can chime in on our Facebook page or contact Janae at janae@klw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Today, we're kicking off a week-long series featuring stories from our new radio program at Solano State Prison in Vacaville. It's called Uncuffed. Damon Cook traces the roots of his violent past to a single moment. As a kid in Compton, he would get bullied on his way home from school. Then he says one day his grandma told him to fight back. He wrote about that moment in a poem called Anger. In this conversation, Damon's friend, Julian Glenn Paget, starts out by reading part of that poem back to Damon.
It all began when I was a young boy, about 7 or 8, full of so much joy. Being harassed and bullied to no end, rocks, oranges, and the occasional can made of tin. Coming home each day from school became an adventure, ducking, dodging, trying not to become a preteen with dentures. Then one day it all started to change. I came home bloody, beaten, and deranged. My grandmother saw me trying to hide, addressing my sobbing by telling me, "Go back outside, face your fears, look those boys square in the eye. Find their soul and make that your battle cry."
Man, that sounds, I've never had anyone read that to me. I appreciate you reading that.
Where were you physically, and what brought about you writing this poem, Anger?
I was at San Quentin. I was in an anger management group called GRIP. And that's guiding your rage and the power. It's a year-long program. And when I got there, I still was struggling with my anger because I realized that I really had a love affair with anger.
Who was your nemesis? Every kid has another kid who's just his just bad day.
The bad day guy was Goldie. He would wait for me in an orange grove right outside of school. And he would have his minions of people around him, and they would throw oranges, and they would throw rocks at me. They would throw things at me every day.
Did you live in a tough neighborhood?
Yeah, I grew up in Compton, California.
Is that where your anger and bullying met?
Yeah, well, that's where I think she met the bully, and then I met her.
Okay, that's interesting. You describe your anger as a she, and you're a man. You're a male. What is that?
That's my love affair. I felt empowered when she was around. She nurtured me through the rough times. Personally, I married her.
As you got older, did that fear, you know, progress into other areas of your life?
It caused me to pick up a weapon, pick up a gun, and shoot Mr. Ryan, you know, because I was fearful of control being lost.
Did it take you away from your family?
Absolutely. It took me away from everything.
How did that make you feel?
Alone, destitute.
When did your change start to come about?
When I was in the hole about 8 years ago for the last time. That's when I realized that I couldn't do this anymore.
What's the hole? Can you describe that?
Sure, the hole is administrative segregation in prison. That's when they take you from the general population and they put you in isolation.
How do they take you?
They take you violently. They handcuff you. They shackle you.
What are the sounds like? What do you hear in the hole?
The things that men don't like to talk about. The cries, the loneliness.
How has your life arced from that?
Me being in the hole, having time to reflect on the things and decisions that I made, the poor choices that I made, allowed different things to happen. But for me, there was really a motivation intrinsically to change. And that's what was going on inside of me, but nobody else knew.
Your anger, still married to her?
No, actually I'm not. We got a divorce, it was amicable.
50-50 state?
Yeah, absolutely, I shook her, but we still got an understanding.
Good, I like that.
No kids.
No kids?
Yeah, so I don't have to pay any alimony.
Thank goodness. Out of this poem that you wrote, is there one line that really resonates with you?
Yeah, I would say the line my grandmother said. Because I'm now starting to make my decisions my battle cry, and no longer am I fearful of my decisions.
What would Damon today say to his 6-year-old or 7-year-old self about the challenges and the the hurdles and the love affair that he is coming between anger and bullying.
I think I would tell him that that relationship you have with anger, that love affair, was simply that, an affair. It wasn't a marriage. You really weren't in love with her. She used you, and you can forgive yourself for being deceived by her.
That piece was produced by Julian Glenn Paget, who spoke with Damon Cook. Our radio training program at Solano State Prison is supported by the California Arts Council with funding from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. All content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to an extended version of Damon's poem at our website, kalw.org. And that's also where you can subscribe to our newsletter and our podcast. Today's Cross Currents team includes Nina Gensler-Debs, Lance Garner, Angela Johnston, Priya Mahadevan, True Quinn, and Marissa Ortega-Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Tariq Foda. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is Jen Chien, and our news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll hear how a San Francisco mural connects Bay Area residents to Palestinian culture and realities.
You know, and I think the wall is an important one, you know, because of its connection to, you know, what's happening here on the border in America and this whole thing with Trump and his wall.
Also, our one-on-one talks with the mayoral candidates of Oakland continue tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. This music is by Smith Dobson. Originally from Santa Cruz, he comes from a long line of jazz players, and he'll be playing at Club Deluxe in San Francisco tomorrow night. Show starts at 9:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Thank you.